morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I am here in the studio with Letitia McDaniel. The late Patty Fink will be joining us presently.
The late Patty Fink.
The late Patty Fink is late as usual, but she has called. Her call was a little bit late today, but
yeah.
You know, she called. She's on her way. She's well on her way. Storms out there. I mean, the weather is just terrible this morning. Did you get caught in the rain at all?
I got caught a little bit around 6 o'clock, it's just started around 6.
But the late Patty Fink just walked in.
And we're talking about the weather.
Right. Well, the weather was real bad. I live in Oak Cliff, and as I was driving down that hill, the big hill out of Oak Cliff toward Oaklawn, the whole sky lit up. It wasn't just one little thunder crack.
Yeah.
It was the entire sky lit up. And coming down that hill, it started pouring, and it was like sliding down that hill. It was not pleasant driving here this morning.
Yeah, but it was just starting to rain in Oaklawn, yeah. So...
Oh, it's going to be bad, I think, when the show's over.
Right.
Oh, great.
And after the show's over, I'm headed downtown. Today is the ExxonMobil
shareholder meeting.
Are you going?
No, unfortunately I'm not. No.
I'm going inside.
Inside?
I'm going inside this year. I got press credentials, and I am going inside. I actually have an appointment to meet. Here's what's going on with that for people who don't know. For the last 12, 13 years, since 1999, when Mobil and Exxon merged, Mobil was one of the first companies in the country to offer partnership benefits. They were the first oil company, but one of the first, among the first 10 to have non-discrimination policies in place.
And gave protections for
gays and lesbians.
Yeah,
for gays and lesbians. And they were serious about it. They were very serious about it. I knew a lot of people who worked for Mobil.
Mobil was a good company before the merger.
Yeah, they were. I mean, as far as workplace protections, it wasn't just that they had them, they pioneered them. They really were a great company that way. Then they merged with Exxon, and Exxon employees said to their new Mobil co-employees, "Welcome to the 60s."
Because Exxon stripped it all out.
It was welcome to the 60s. They said, your computer that you have the latest, expect a downgrade in your computer software. I mean, it was everything that they were saying, welcome to the 60s. Anyway, when they merged...
Exxon stripped it all out. Now they have this vanilla, meaningless... non-discrimination policy that basically says we don't discriminate against anybody.
Well, but actually that's not even in their non-discrimination policy. It's in their employee handbook, which doesn't... judges have ruled that doesn't have the power. The Securities and Exchange Commission ruled against Exxon. Exxon tried to have this year's shareholder proposal thrown out, which is kind of unprecedented to do in itself.
Well, and each year that this has been introduced, the principal sponsor has been the New York State Employees Pension Fund, which holds billions in ExxonMobil stock.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have some strength there, and they've been really, really remarkable stepping up as a leader in leadership on this issue to get this EEO policy passed. And every time ExxonMobil tells its shareholders, vote against this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And every time it creeps up in percentage. Because directors at ExxonMobil, are from companies that have like 100%, scores with HRC and such.
Now, I've been in touch with Thomas DiNapoli, who's the New York State Comptroller. Over the last couple of years, and he's new, when I say new, he came into office, I believe, with who's their new governor? Cuomo. Cuomo's the one who signed marriage equality.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with marriage equality, that's given him new impetus. You know, I was just up in New York a couple of weeks ago, and those people are serious about it. You know, they're serious about this discrimination thing. It's nonsense. And that's the attitude up in New York right now. This is nonsense. So here's what DiNapoli has done. He's negotiated with 27 companies to get non-discrimination policies in place.
That's awesome.
Because he holds this much stock. He has negotiated with them saying that they're denying benefits to some of the people who are married in New York State and giving them to others who are married in New York State is illegal.
And it is. Imagine that. It's illegal.
Yeah.
But he's serious about it. And so he's not just... Now, understand that if this shareholder resolution passes, the shareholder resolution is to add gender identity and sexual orientation into the non-discrimination policy. Mm-hmm. On the HRC Corporate Equality Guide, it's a range of 0 to 100, right? And you get points for each thing that you offer your employees. ExxonMobil is one of the very few companies with a minus 25 rating. So if the resolution passes today, that will bring ExxonMobil up to a CEI score of 5.
Wow. That's pretty wild.
If it passes, this is something that shareholders have been trying to get passed since 1999, and it will get them a rating of 5.
But you know what? It's the most basic of things. You can't be fired mm-hmm. simply because you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. That's the most basic thing. And, you know, Aaron and I were very involved in this in the early 2000s. In fact, we ended up in a meeting with the secretary of ExxonMobil, you know, with Elizabeth Birch and several others from HRC. At the time, we had a blimp, you know, the dump fuel discrimination. And back when it was Argus Square, that's completely, like, redone down there. But, you know, when you go to these ExxonMobil shareholder meetings outside, it'll start very quickly, probably gathering now, to begin about 8 o'clock.
The meeting starts at 9. Anybody who wants to go protest outside, it's outside
the Meyerson.
Protesters starting really at 8, 8 to 8:30.
Yeah, they're starting around 8.
Meetings at 9.
Right. And it'll be done noonish, 1 o'clock with their business, but shareholders come from all over to attend. And it's a really interesting gathering outside because you see there's a lot of people upset with ExxonMobil, obviously. So it's LGBT people, it's environmentalists, it's, you know, globalists, you know, all these folks out there are really upset with one of the biggest companies in the world. Who's making billions in profit. That's above the line of costs. In profit every quarter, and yet still get subsidized by the U.S. government. You know, it's very strange. But the whole idea is that every year this has been happening, and every year there seem to be counter-protesters that show up, and it's many points. You know, there were ties to ExxonMobil that they were hiring these, mm-hmm. paying these companies or these organizations to show up. And they counter protest, and they are like for, like my favorite was oil for the children. It's like that's so bizarre.
Well, we want our children well oiled, don't we?
I would think so.
My favorite was wind energy kills birds.
So if you want to see some really, I mean, a lot of us in the LGBT community have been to protests, yeah. and we've seen counter-protesters before. But these folks, I tell you.
Well, these people are hired by the company to counter-protest.
Right.
And in fact, they're even allowed on the same side of the street. The Exxon protesters are across the street from the Meyerson.
Oh, wow.
But the counter-protesters that Exxon has hired are allowed right in front of the Meyerson.
Lovely.
It's colorful. It's just colorful and it's fun, and we'll see how
and
much it gets
might,
voted down by this time.
I think it has an opportunity to be passed because when Exxon this year, kind of uniquely because of the SEC suit, that ExxonMobil said no, we're gonna this is ridiculous that we have this on our ballot every year. We're gonna get this pulled off the shareholder ballot. And in order to do that, they had to file with the SEC, and the SEC slapped them down and said, no, it's very clear that your policy does not protect gay and lesbian employees or LGBT employees.
And you know what the oddest thing about this is? It's not like we're hearing complaints about Exxon from people. I hear in my office every week, I'll hear from one or two people, you know, I have this discrimination complaint. I don't know how much, either that or I was just fired from my job, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I have heard discrimination complaints about 100% or AT&T. Yesterday, I got a call from somebody complaining about 100% or Wells Fargo. Do you know the one company I've never gotten a call about is Exxon?
Really?
It's one of those things. I have never gotten a call about discrimination by an employee from Exxon, because when it comes right down to it, the company really, they discriminate in that they give a heterosexually married couple partnership benefits. They get a homosexually married couple none. They don't offer certain things to some of their employees. So there's that kind of discrimination, yes, and that's terrible. And it does cost a gay couple a lot more money than it costs a straight couple, just to, you know, to pay your taxes, to do everything else that you have to do, to the tune of, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars a year sometimes, depending upon your income. But and there is that inequality. But I'm talking about somebody just filing an employment complaint, somebody just calling Dallas Voice and saying, you know, I don't know if you can do anything. Sometimes just the publicity embarrasses them into stop doing. I've never gotten one on Exxon. I hear them about these 100% companies all the time.
It's because there's an awareness. I think it's because there's an awareness within the company that this is wrong. This is a policy, and I'm experiencing this now, mm-hmm. and it's very clear cut, and you know we have to call attention to it.
Now, have you ever experienced
ExxonMobil employees probably go, there's not a thing we can do.
Well, no, but ExxonMobil employees, I think the mobile people come from such a background of we don't discriminate, and I think the Exxon people really don't discriminate.
Do you really believe that? Are you going to be the lone person, the little whistleblower, essentially, that would step up against ExxonMobil?
But if you've been fired, why not? Why not step forward and tell your story?
Well, I mean, if they included a severance package that's going to get you through.
I was like, they give me enough hush money. Basically, they have enough. I mean, they have enough profit to give you enough money to keep you quiet.
I'm not defending them.
Yeah, I would not go to make that leap, though, David, and say they're probably not discriminating.
No, I guess what I'm saying is that they don't seem to have that corporate culture of, oh, we hate gay people here. So I'm wondering, why won't they just pass the damn policy?
Yeah, I can see
that's my point here.
Yeah.
They're not. It's not like, God, I just heard from another one. Oh, you know, we're hearing stories about how miserable it is to work there.
Yeah.
I'm not hearing those stories from people about how miserable it is to work there and how, I just have to suffer every day through that, through those snipes from my supervisor. Actually, I've heard the opposite, that when somebody starts with that, they're talked to. That is not allowed. You know, it's like, it's get to work. We're serious about work here. We don't get into personalities here. It is more what I have heard from people who work there.
I can see it from both perspectives. As far as I can see, the fact, reason why they won't pass a resolution, just pure stubbornness, saying, you know what, we don't really need this. We don't have this problem here. Why do we need to put this into paper? And I can see it from that end. But at the same time, if they do pass a resolution, it may lead to this kind of opening up of people who felt like they had been discriminated, but now they, you know, but have felt afraid to actually come out. This may lead to, you know, people starting to speak up. So,
well, I agree with you on the point about coming out. I mean, how many employees there feel are walking around and navigating their jobs every day that if they come out on the job, it's going to be firing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that to me is as big a concern as getting fired, because if you're, you know, shoved in this place where there's that it's a don't ask, don't tell environment, and it's, you know, it's proven, maybe you've seen somebody be fired or not get a promotion or not hired because they're LGBT. That's a huge chilling effect. We talk about chilling effect. That's that's affecting people's daily lives.
Well,
that's big.
It is. You know, I'm not defending them. I guess. I think maybe we're coming at it from two different ways. One, you're saying they really are bigots, and I'm saying they really are just stubborn.
I think they're stubborn. Yeah. There's no question they're stubborn. Yeah. I don't give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
They're too huge. They're too massive. They're too big, and they are so stubborn on this issue that you have to believe that they're hiding something, and that's the way I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that if they really wanted to open that, they don't want to open that can of worms because there's a big can.
Hmm.
That's my take.
I'm wondering. I don't know. I'm just, from what I've heard, you know, I've heard things. Now, AT&T is a perfect example of a company that fixed this after it got out. One employee was working even with an attorney trying to get family leave, meaning you don't have to pay me, I just need a few weeks off to take care of my partner. He had a stroke and he's coming home and I have to be there to take care of him. And AT&T, no, we don't have that policy, don't have that policy, don't have that policy. It got to the point where the partner was coming home tomorrow, I need to take off. And newspaper got involved, and within 4 hours, well, you know, it has to do with union rules, and so we have to renegotiate this with the union, but in your case, I guess we can just figure out a way to give you some unpaid time off. And they finally did. But this was after several months of working with an attorney and working with somebody. So that's a company with 100% rating. So I'm wondering, and they have since fixed that. Mm-hmm. And part of the problem, they're blaming it on different companies that have come together, and each one has different union contracts, and straightening it out so that everybody has these rights that some branches of the company already had. It was that kind of thing. But it was stubbornness also, you know, not being able to see the big picture and to just see that, you know, here's an employee, take care of him. You know, but that always happens with companies that are too big to fail, which should always work. Have you ever experienced direct discrimination yourself?
No, not
in employment.
And I work for the state, so work at UT. So no, I haven't experienced. I mean, I wouldn't say that they're the most, you know, opening. Like, we're not having like a pride, you know, a pride festival on campus or anything like that. But no, I wouldn't say. I mean, it's academics, and you know, academia is usually more liberal than, you know, other
you
companies.
You don't have the policy. Same
yeah,
thing.
We don't. But yeah. Well, it's because I work for the state, and
right.
The state doesn't
right.
have that in their non-discrimination policy, and they have to abide by the non-discrimination policy that's provided by the state.
Well, and you know, in session after session in the Texas legislature, there's a bill that comes up that talks about the UT system and the UT regents and having a system of non-discrimination mm-hmm. for the University of Texas system.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And that would give you protections
yes.
today if that were had passed, but session after session, it doesn't.
Yeah,
doesn't seem.
And that would be only for
move.
That.
It'd be for the UT system, which is
for that system,
which is
and,
huge.
But yeah. we have several state systems of schools, because there's the A&M system, there's the Texas Tech system, there's the UNT system. There are all these little systems now, and they're not so little. So it would only protect your system.
Yeah, but that would like
maybe
Houston and San Antonio and Galveston.
What about just not discriminating?
That's a lot of places.
That's a lot
just
of places?
Not discriminating anywhere.
I mean, you know, let's just look at UT Austin right there. That's massive. That's mm-hmm. the largest number of people on campus anywhere in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really 60,000 people.
Yeah.
That's, it, you know, insta protection.
We should have that. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and
Tishina
Daniel.
Sometimes late.
One of our pledges was in your memory, so we're not going to
yes,
dispel that
yes.
myth.
Yes, yes.
We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
You are listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
KNON thanks Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Bayer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERimaging.com.
Good. Research.com provides a way for you to support nonprofits like KNON with your online shopping and dining. GoodSearch.com offers a downloadable toolbar for searching from your computer called Good App, so your purchases can support KNON. With Good Dining, every time you go out to eat at participating restaurants, then a portion of what you spend gets donated to KNON. Registering is easy at GoodSearch.com, and KNON 89.3 is the name to enter in your account settings for charity selection. Support KNON with your online shopping and dining at GoodSearch.com.
This is Jake Winters from Leicester, England, and I listen to Lambert Weekly on KNON 89.3 FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Letitia McDaniel and the late Patty Fink. Elections yesterday was the primary. Some of the bigger races, the new District 33, VC in Fort Worth is going to face Garcia from Dallas. That's a district that goes from basically the gay neighborhood in Oak Cliff up through some lesbian neighborhood in Irving, this little thing, then across UT Arlington and into down into Fort Worth to the Rainbow Lounge. That's the district.
You can talk about it through gay landmarks.
That's how it was districted. I'm not in that district. I'm in Eddie Bernice's still, but which is District 30. District 33 starts a block away from my house, though. So they were trying to pack all of those districts, they missed a neighborhood. But VC will be against Garcia. In Eddie Bernice Johnson's race, she won with about 70% of the vote. A couple of the opponents were actually, one of the opponents was actually better funded than she was, just not better known.
Yeah.
That was Taj Clayton, who only got 12% of the vote.
Yeah, he came in third.
He came in third, which is, it's surprising and it's not. The one who came in second was Barbara Mallory. Barbara Mallory is just well-known. Barbara Mallory Caraway is just well-known. And probably most of her votes came from southeast Dallas, where her house district was. People know her. A couple of other races. Lupe Valdez is up for re-election for sheriff. She trounced an opponent with about 75% of the vote. But now she's up against who, Patty?
A guy named Kirk Lanius, who lost badly to Sheffy Cadane for a Dallas City Council race in my district, District 9, just what, a year ago. Mm-hmm. And now he's going to go up against Lupe Valdez, who has turned around Dallas County. The Dallas County Sheriff's Department, the jails, and and everything is. I think that's going to be. I'm just going to say, I think it's going to be a waste of his time.
Speaking of a waste of their time, I stopped by Eddie Bernice's yesterday and got to speak to her. I'm the only print reporter she speaks to. When I was invited, it was, okay, that woman who works for you, you're not going to bring her, are you? I said, no, it'll be me. And your editor, he's tough. I said, no, it's me. I'm the nice one. So I got to speak to Eddie Bernice, and she was funny. She said, she said she's going back to Washington, D.C. today. She doesn't have a runoff, so she's going back. She said she has, there's a lot of work that needs to be done the rest of this session, and they're planning on getting back to work this week. So,
and she has a 100% rating with HRC.
Do you know she actually... She has currently 100% rating. Do you know she voted for DOMA originally?
Did she really?
She did. She did.
I thought
in 1996. That's her last bad vote, though. In 1996, that was her last bad vote. She has a 98.5% rating with HRC overall. But she currently and for the last 10 years has maintained a 100% rating. So
yeah, she's
that
been
is
really
accurate.
Good on her issues for the last
very long time. She's also a sponsor of the repeal of DOMA.
It's all about evolving.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
She was very funny. She said, she takes every challenge seriously. She does have an opponent in the fall who's another Tea Party candidate. Last time she faced a Tea Party candidate, she trounced him with 75% of the vote or a little bit more than that. But she does take challenges seriously. Mm-hmm. We asked her about her her race this time. She said, well, two people did choose to challenge me. Might not have been the best decisions they've ever made in their lives. She said it just like that.
Oh, she'll have a formidable campaign against two whoever is running against her in the fall.
Oh, she will. I mean, it's somebody who's unknown, and it's a district that's still packed Democratic. So.
But speaking of Tea Party, I noticed the a headline in the Dallas Morning News, one of their editorials today, points out that the business GOP is pushing back. In Texas, is pushing back heavily against the Tea Party.
Yes.
And we see that in the U.S. Senate primary for the GOP, mm-hmm. where David Dewhurst, our lieutenant governor, is not a Tea Party man.
Right.
Is, you know...
Like him or not, he's not
right.
a Tea Party.
He's not a Tea Party guy. And he's, you know, very seriously ahead of Ted Cruz, but there's going to be a runoff. And that's going to be an interesting fight in Texas. And that made headlines everywhere last night.
Yeah, and he put a lot of money into making sure that it wouldn't be a runoff. I mean, up $10 million on his campaign, and it didn't go the way he wanted it to. So now he's going to have to, you know, go out there some more and against this Tea Party candidate,
which has
been endorsed by Sarah Palin, of all people.
When you have four candidates, and they're known, chances are you're going to have a runoff.
Yes.
I mean, even on the Democratic side, that's the one that shocked me. There's going to be a runoff on the Democratic side. None of the candidates was well-known. The best-known was Paul Sadler, former state rep. He got 35% of the vote. The one who got about 30% of the vote was this guy Yarborough, Grady Yarborough, who doesn't have a website.
And the one who came in ahead of him was relatively unknown.
No, he's the one in the runoff.
Yarborough?
Yarborough's
Yarborough made it the runoff?
Yeah.
Oh, I must be looking at Dallas County results. Sorry.
Dallas County results was Allen.
Beat, completely. I don't even know who that is.
Allen beat Sadler in Dallas County. Sean Hubbard, who actually has been campaigning and was on our show a year ago, Hubbard came in fourth. Yarborough doesn't have a website. didn't know that he had to file anything with the Federal Elections Commission, could actually be arrested for running this illegal campaign.
Mm-hmm.
He came in second. He's in the runoff. The only thing that I can think of is Ralph Yarborough, spelled differently, was Texas senator from 1957 to 1971.
Beloved.
Beloved senator from Texas.
And so there's this name recognition.
The only thing I can think of, why would anybody have voted for somebody that they never heard of who won't respond to when a newspaper is able to get in touch with him with a newspaper question to him? You've never seen him on the news. You haven't seen an ad from him. How did people figure to vote for him?
Well, it's pretty amazing. But I ran my polling location yesterday, and mm-hmm. we had several precincts combined. And what was interesting to me when I ran the tape at the end of the night was how many undervotes there were, mm-hmm. not only in the U.S. Senate race, but, you know, on down the ticket. So there was this kind of gap between voting for Barack Obama, you know, and then the nomination of renomination of him. At the top of the ticket, and then there was sort of a skip. In a lot of those races, there were just lots of people didn't mark anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then they jumped down to people like the sheriff and some judges and others, and then they started marking again. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was interesting to me to see that kind of gap. And there were maybe they had no information on some of these people, maybe, and they just chose not to mark anything.
Okay, and I know you make it a point, Patty, to know who you're voting for.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, you've met the people who you're voting for, including Barack. Oh, Patty and Barry are tight.
Barry.
Right.
Letitia, what do you do when you don't know a candidate?
I just mark it, honestly. I don't know. I mean, I've had the privilege of, you know, through Patty to actually meet some of these people or through working with either like Jesse Garcia at LULAC or, you know, other organizations. So I've been able to actually meet some of the candidates that I was voting for yesterday. But some of them, I just went by endorsements.
Okay, if somebody's unopposed.
There you go.
Now, with undervotes, undervoting means that you left spaces out.
I don't leave anything blank.
I usually do not either. I'll find out information before I go into vote.
You make a point of finding out ahead of time.
Yeah. I didn't this year. Usually I do, but this year was like
If somebody is running unopposed, if somebody's running unopposed, then both of you will mark that one so that you're not undervoting.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
I think in those cases, a lot of people just say, unopposed doesn't need my vote. I don't know who this person is. I'm not going to vote for him. I don't want to endorse somebody that
unopposed were the ones that were left blank.
No, a lot of them were. Well, yeah, there were a lot of them that were skipped.
Yeah.
But at the same time, a lot of them got marked. But I noticed the biggest gap, I think, in the U.S. Senate race and some of those because they didn't know who they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's what happened is they didn't know who they were and they said, I don't know who to mark.
And I was completely confused because now my district has changed. And so I was expecting to see Eddie Bernice Johnson on my ballot and she wasn't on there at all because I'm in a different district now. So
oh, are you in 33?
I'm in 32. So she's...
You're in 30. Oh, you're part of Oak Lawn that got stuck with... what's his name? Sessions.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, that's right, because Oak Cliff got rid of Sessions altogether,
mm-hmm.
which is, how was Sessions in Oak Cliff? There was this little piece that was gerrymandered in order to get rid of Martin Frost 10 years ago.
Right.
And so piece of Oak Cliff got stuck with Pete Sessions for a while. Now that part of Oak Cliff is part of the new 33,
mm-hmm.
but in order to give Pete Sessions the number of people he needed, he has this one little finger that goes into Oak Lawn.
Mm-hmm. He famously said years ago that when asked about, gay people in his district, he said he didn't have any.
Right.
And, that has lived on in my memory of him. And we're about a block, we're one precinct away from being in his district. So we're not in his district.
So you're in whose?
We're in Jeb Hensarling's district.
Oh, you're over in Jeb Hensarling.
Yes, barely.
So in that district, on the Democratic side, there's a runoff.
Right.
Between Marasco and Tom somebody.
Tom Berry.
None of them strong candidates.
No. I don't even... Whoever wins that runoff is not going to beat Jeb Hensarling.
Right.
That's my opinion.
Yeah.
I just don't think they're well-funded enough. And he's, he has a leadership role now in the Congress, and so, it's going to be tough. It would be very tough to beat him,
mm-hmm.
I think. And that's what's interesting. The other big thing, I think, of interest to our community, if you're following local politics, is in the new redrawn District 1 of the County Commissioner's Court mm-hmm. in Dallas. And Teresa Daniel, headed off a runoff. There will be no runoff in the Democratic primary.
She got about 53% of the vote yesterday.
Right, against very formidable opponents. And so that was one that managed not to get into the runoff. So that's going to be an interesting race in the fall, too, because it's a redesigned district, redrawn so that it's a minority or Democratic, district.
Right. It's the first time that any of the districts... When I first moved to Dallas, you could take the square county, and basically there was a line that went down the county and a line that went across the county, and it was the four corners mm-hmm. of the county. Now this new District 1 is in the middle of the county, and they've redrawn District 4, the Republican district, taking in all of the north and around, wrapping around down into Garland and other Republican areas to pack all the Republicans into one district and spread out the others. But it's the first time that one of the districts doesn't touch the edge of the county at all. It's in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, this is the year where there are four county commissioners and one county judge, and so the five make up the Dallas County Commissioner's Court. And this is the year where we have districts 1 and 3, and then I believe it's next year we'll have the 2 and 4 will be up. But if you wonder which Dallas County Commissioner's Court you belong, look at the first number in your four-digit precinct mm-hmm. number, and that'll tell you which district you're in.
Right, right. The other county commissioner's race, John Wiley Price, easily took re-election. Now, what's going to be interesting in Teresa Daniels' case, Teresa has been a longtime member of Stonewall Democrats. She's, she's a good liberal Dem, and she'd be delighted to be described that way.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And she's been in leadership within the party. She's been an SDEC member representing Senate District 16 mm-hmm. for a long time.
Now, the opponent The Republican who won, he won with about 75% of the vote. Cannot think of what his name is. Larry Miller?
Yes.
Is that him?
Larry
yes.
Miller.
Okay. So Miller got about 75% of the vote. Fernandez got about 25% of the vote. I had interviewed Fernandez for an article in Dallas Voice, and I like Cecile. Very nice person. Had she won, we would have been fine.
She was supportive of LGBT.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. Supportive, and but you know what? Just a nice person. She was delightful to talk to. Miller took a quote from me and used it in his campaign mailer, and he had done no campaigning, wouldn't return a call to me, but because, you know, I'll talk to anybody, so, you know, I would have talked to him. But Miller took a quote from that article, and Dallas Voice says Cecile Fernandez something, I forgot what it was,
supports domestic partnership benefits,
something like yeah. that, yeah, that's right, and are these your values? And I looked at that and I said, why yes they are.
But, well, and then was this the one where he went on to say it wasn't gay bashing?
Right. That's not gay bashing, that's just,
or gay baiting even,
right? No,
it's really gay baiting, because he's asking the question of, you know, potential constituents and voters mm-hmm. for him to say, don't you agree with me? These, you know, mm-hmm. the queers shouldn't get any.
Now, in that district, I hope that Teresa takes that, runs with it, and just points the finger back at him and shows him up for who he is. That his opponent was a nice, fair-minded person who was reaching out to every constituency that she can, and I hope she invites log cabin Republicans in that district to vote for her mm-hmm. Because he went after their candidate.
Yeah, exactly.
And Cecile, really delightful person, you know, it doesn't sound like we're nonpartisan on this show very often, but really I would have been delighted if she was the new county commissioner. She was a good, fair-minded person. Not was, she still is. And I hope she runs for office again, because I like the idea of having two people to actually be able to consider to vote for.
Yeah.
And I would vote for her. She's somebody I could vote for.
Well, you know, I was looking at the funky District 1, and, you know, and Aaron and I have known Teresa Daniel for mm-hmm. eons, and she lives down the street from us, but she lives further enough away that our precinct and then one precinct over are still in District 2, mm-hmm. and so it kind of wraps around us, and I'm kind of jealous that, you know, they could, my neighbors, you know, who, like, across this one street, they get to vote for Teresa, but we can't.
Mm, yeah.
Well, in the city redistricting, my house, there's this, they're breaking up Scott's district because it's so huge and massive. So in the next election, Von Seal Jones will come and ends right at my house. Across the street from me, I'm Caraway. I'll be Caraway's district. Across the street from me, Von Seal wraps around our house and just a block south of us and goes to all of my neighbors across the street, which is actually farther away from where she is, just in order to break up Scott's district into smaller pieces.
They probably fought over who should have you. You know,
I don't want
you
him.
Take
I don't
you
want
take him.
No, you take him. I don't want him. It seems, but Eddie Bernice Johnson's district ends a block north of my house, and so I'm right on that border.
We're right on the
also.
Edge. Literally, yeah. If we were one more precinct over, we would be in somebody else's district and a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. One thing that is interesting to me is that we're personally now in 114 for Texas House. And the Democratic candidate who was one of those on the ballot that by herself was Carol Kent.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a former state representative who
lost to a Tea Party candidate.
Right. But in 114, I think, has a really good shot. And then one little bit over is Robert Miklos, sort of the same situation. But I was going to point out a quick item about Teresa Daniels' race. She ran several years ago in the cycle right after Harriet Earhart and Glenn Maxey and a a great number of progressive Democrats in the Texas House were redistricted out very conspicuously. I mean, Harriet's was by four houses. You know, we don't want you in this district.
Right.
And she stepped up and ran in what had been in Harriet Earhart's District 107. And didn't win that seat, but so she's got some experience behind her.
Mm-hmm. And we need to take a break.
That.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Patty Fink and Letitia McDaniel. We'll be back with more right after this.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
KNON thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. Now is the time to make your pledge count. Send your pledge to KNON's P.O. Box 710909, Dallas, Texas 75371. If you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by pledging on the web at KNON.org. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. That's KNON Box 710909, Dallas, Texas 75371. Be sure to put the name of the show you are supporting on the check, money order, or the envelope. Questions about KNON Pledge Drive? Call 214-828-9500, extension 234.
This is William. I listen to Lambda Weekly on Wednesdays at 7 a.m. on KNON on 89.3 FM.
And that was Doc. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and the early Letitia McDaniel. We're just talking, wrap of the elections, stuff like that. Romney, we didn't mention him. He wrapped up the nomination yesterday.
What's interesting, too, about that is that Texas put him over the top so that he has enough delegates. Now he's there's no way anybody else is going to get nominated.
Right.
And 4 years ago, Texas put McCain over the top.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was, I was like, wow, do we really have to do that?
I know. And the way Romney thanks Texas voters is by not even being in Texas and being in Vegas, trying to smooth Donald Trump. So
That was amazing. Where was he at this moment? He was in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And so, you don't believe that that Obama was born in Kenya? I mean, if that's what they're going to bring up as the campaign issue, let him.
Oh, I think so too. I think it's what did they call it when Clinton was in office? The bimbo eruption.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we got birther eruptions.
Yeah,
and it's just. I hope they do it too.
If that's the issue that they're going to find to fight the election on.
If that's the best they can do is an idiotic, weird conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? They will never find Barack Obama's birth certificate. You know why? Because he was born in Hawaii and they issue a certificate of birth there.
Yeah.
And the state of Hawaii has told them over and over and over. It's why the guy in Arizona, the Secretary of State in Arizona, this is a bigger issue with me, and I've talked with Rafael and Chia about this. Mm-hmm. We've got to get something to make sure this doesn't happen in Texas. Because it happened in Florida in 2000 and 2004 and in Ohio as well. Is the Secretary of State is responsible for fair elections in their state and overseeing fair elections in their state and everything about it, right? And yet the Secretary of State in the state of Arizona, as it was in Ohio with Ken Blackwell, as it was in Florida with Catherine Harris, is the co-chair of the Republican nominee's campaign in that state. And that, I think, is wrong. You cannot be so overtly and responsible. You're taking on responsibility for a campaign when you co-chair it. He's responsible for it. And how can you believe that there's going to be a fair election? Either party.
Mm-hmm.
How can you possibly even have the appearance of fairness when you're, the co-chair of the Bush-Cheney campaign or the co-chair of the Mitt Romney campaign or the McCain campaign? It's insane to me.
It needs to be somebody.
That's what happened in Arizona.
It doesn't necessarily need to be somebody nonpartisan, because it is going to be somebody partisan, but it needs to be somebody who's not involved in the campaign.
Yeah, we should have a state law that says you cannot also be have a role in anyone else's campaign while you're serving the state as its Secretary of State.
And you can be partisan. You can be in favor of one candidate over the other.
You can vote. But you shouldn't be able to be
An official in the campaign.
An official in someone's campaign while you're running the campaign, running the election.
Yeah. And right now we're not. You know what was surprising, though? Did you look at the Republican ballot? When I was looking at the votes, do you know who was not on the ballot? What's his name? Our governor.
No, Perry.
That's him. He was not on the ballot here.
Michelle Bachmann was.
Michelle Bachmann, she came in fairly, I guess,
well,
number
you
two
get down
was
there,
Santorum.
You get down there when you're talking about just a couple of hundred votes, and, you know, it's you're jockeying for position. It's, you know, it's the Kentucky Derby backpack.
But Santorum,
Michelle Bachmann and all those guys.
Well, but they did manage to get 30% of the vote.
Collectively.
Which means that there are 30% of Republicans in this state who don't like their nominee. I mean, it's settled already. Just like there's 10% of Democrats in the state of Texas who don't like the nominee.
Had some discussions with Ed Oakley and others in the community. Was about how, and I'll be curious to see the final numbers, Tom Leppert, who was mayor of Dallas, and defeated Ed Oakley in a runoff to become mayor of Dallas, was just squashed like a bug in his race for Senate, the U.S. Senate nomination for
Goodbye
the
Goodbye and good riddance
Republican.
To that
yes.
trash.
Yes.
Why do you think that happened?
Oh, it was a when he first announced that he was going to run, for one, that was no surprise. It was just a matter of when. And It really, I mean, his moves to, you know, join First Baptist Church, you know, and his statements about one man, one woman, before he's even left the mayor's office, that was just a big tip to, you know, I'm going to be running, and I'm going to go way right. And he has no name recognition. He was certainly not statewide, and I don't think he's going to carry the city of Dallas. I'm going to look at the results again, but... I don't think he would carry his own city, much less Houston or Austin or El Paso or any of these
now,
big
one
Texas
statistic,
cities.
And I looked it up, person by person by person, a mayor of Dallas has never gone on to higher elective office.
It's a dead-end job. Absolutely, it's a dead-end job.
The other thing is that no governor in the state of Texas's history and no senator in the history of Texas has ever come from a mayor's job or a city council.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Those positions just... Now, there are people like Ron Kirk, who was appointed trade representative. There are some people who've gone on to the House of Representatives, actually a few more who've gone on to the State House and State Senate.
But look at like Steve Barton. He didn't become mayor of Dallas until after he'd served in Congress.
Right, it was backwards. He came back to become
because it's
mayor.
A dead-end job.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a rising political star, you don't become mayor of Dallas. You just don't, because it's over.
Or mayor of Houston, though.
That's
the
true.
Thing. No mayor of Houston has ever gone on to higher elective office. No mayor of Austin. No mayor of San Antonio. Henry Cisneros appointed to the cabinet. He was a mayor of San Antonio and went on. But never... elected to higher office. So we knew that with Leppert that was dead end. The other thing, though, I think that annoyed people even more than the gay thing, because on the gay side, most were not voting in that election. I think it was his flip-flops, because Republicans do not tolerate anybody changing a position ever. Evolve.
Which is going to be really interesting, because they have Willard Mitt Romney.
That's why I say he...
Well, which is why he's not popular. So evolve doesn't happen.
Or in evolution.
Well, or in Romney's case, devolving from being the first governor to sign same-sex marriage into law to somebody who's adamantly opposed to it somehow. But with Leppert, one thing he did... He was for the Trinity Project when he was mayor until he was running for senator, and then he was against the Trinity Project. And he had a number of other policy changes that it was for no other reason. It happened at the point at which he announced his nomination. I don't think that flies real well with most voters. I mean, I think Democrats, if they had a candidate who suddenly went from one position to the other, you know, he was for the bridge until he was against it when he was running. He was for the Trinity Project and then he was running. He was, you know, how does anybody trust you with the position?
Well, and I think, I honestly think that's one reason that Rick Perry went down in flames.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of Republicans in this state, who wouldn't give him money, who wouldn't support him, and there's a lot of Republicans who still remember this whole Trans-Texas Corridor attempt that he made, that still remember the Giardia, was it Giardia? No, that's a, the other disease. What is it? Gardasil.
Oh, Gardasil. Uh-huh.
Another G word. The Gardasil vaccine that he was going to impose on 12-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And they're really offended by that. You know, and so I don't think he got the groundswell or money that he really hoped to get from the GOP in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think he's going to be an idiot if he runs again for governor, for more reasons than just him being him. Who stays in the governorship? What state lets their governor stay in the office for more than 14 years? You know?
Texas. And we used to have 1 2-year term. It became 1 4-year term sometime in the 70s. And it's only that recently, 1 4-year term. Then it became, in the 90s, multiple terms without term limits.
Yep.
No. I don't know of any other state that allows that. I mean, he is the longest-serving governor in the country. So, one other race that was real interesting in El Paso, Mary Gonzalez. Mary Gonzalez, openly gay, won the nomination, and she has, I think, token opposition. We need to get her on the show, but she's the presumed nominee. Now she's not just openly gay, she's...
Latina?
I was going to say, so screamingly openly... I don't give a flying gay. You know, when talking to her, it's, you know, I'm not going to be the first lesbian in the House of Representatives, because the other representative from El Paso, she's a lesbian too. It's just, I don't know why she won't come out. You know, that's the way Mary talks. It's frank talk. And our sheriff, why doesn't our sheriff come out? You know, we have another gay sheriff in Texas. It's no big deal. So Mary is not going to be the shy and reserved lesbian that we have in some states, state legislatures. She's going to be the big mouth that we need.
I mean, well, she's young. She's 28. She's fired up. She's fresh. You know, she's not going to keep her mouth shut.
It is a generational thing. It's a generational thing that I'm gay.
So what?
You're Presbyterian, you know, and it doesn't matter. I mean, these are just things that are just different things that we know about each other, and that's nice, and, you know, it's cool. But that's the way she is. She is going to be such a breath of fresh air in the legislature. She's going to be funny. We need to get her on the show. So the runoff, then, will be July 31st. It's also a Tuesday.
I think so.
It's 6 weeks from yesterday, which they extended it by state law. State law changed as far as when runoffs are.
It used to be 30 days.
Yeah.
But I think this is actually probably better for candidates, because if you're, especially in something like a congressional District 33, where you have two very viable candidates, mm-hmm. I guess it would just be 6 weeks would be a pain in the butt for somebody who's going to obviously win, but for a district where there's going to be a serious fight, 6 weeks is just two more weeks that you can help convince your voters and get them out and all of that.
Well, between Sadler and Yarborough, that is...
He'd have to find Yarborough to debate him, wouldn't he?
Darndest race. I mean, I don't know how he amounted... I mean, and it was a difference between... He got 80,000 votes. It's not like people accidentally voted for him. Who are these people who were voting for this man?
I think a lot of people made assumptions about his name misrepresentation. And because, remember, several years... I think it was the last time, in fact.
Yarborough died 20 years ago.
I know. But there has been a lot of funky name recognition things happening in the U.S. Senate race, because 2 years ago, when it was the other seat, it was...
Gene Kelly. Yeah, well, I think people were just voting for Gene Kelly because they thought that would be funny. It's like when they voted for Ron Chapman. who, Ron Chapman was a good guy, he was a good judge, it's not that.
Oh, I love Ron.
But most people voted for him because of his morning show on KVIL.
Completely different guy.
I understand that, but I'm saying most people were voting for the guy on KVIL and had no idea who Ron Chapman the judge is. And Ron will be the first one to tell you that. I did a story in Dallas Voice last week about Al McCaffrey, state senator, openly gay from Oklahoma. Story came out Friday. Saturday, he had a flag burned on his front lawn for Memorial Day. Al got in touch with me. He said, I'm not blaming you. And I said, no, I want the blame.
Get written up by David Daffett.
Your house is going to... Yeah, but for Memorial Day weekend, flag burned on his lawn.
Has he been... And I hope they catch whoever did that.
They did not, but yeah.
You know, that would be... that would be totally different. But he's been on our show. He was the first openly gay state representative, and then he went to the state senate.
He's in the Senate now. Yeah, he was just elected to the Senate now.
That's
this year.
We need to get him back.
Oh, I already told him that anytime he's in Texas, come on the show. That's it for us on Lambda Weekly. Next week, do you have the book? Our guest is going to be the author of Outlaw Marriages.
Yeah, his Outlaw name is Marriages, Roger Stettmatter, I guess that's right. But the book is called Outlaw Marriages, and so we will have a call-in interview with him.
Oh, I wanted to be here for this, but I'm going to be...
We can get you on the cell phone.
Well, I'm going to be at work in D.C.
And we'll see you next week.